The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, relinquishment or renunciation implies desisting of something, giving up something, letting go. But it's voluntary. So I'm interested in looking at renunciation in our reality. I came across an expression in the suttas, in the discourses, that I found quite interesting, and it's mental acquisitions. So I was thinking, what is this? It's unusual, isn't it? Mental acquisitions. So I was thinking a little bit, what does it refer to? So we all grow up in a particular culture, and without our realizing, we are internalizing from day one all kinds of habits, costumes, observances, traditions, values. And many of them become invisible to us. If we've never been exposed to another culture, it's just what it is, you know, it's like the water for the fish in a tank. So one of these very prevalent ideas, values that a lot of us have internalized is shopping will make me happy. And I realized that really this has become a very central part of this culture. I think we associate being a good citizen with consuming. Oh, consuming makes the economy strong. And so then I look a little bit at what does consumerism imply? So it implies shopping or acquiring more than what we need, and not only shopping in excess, but it also implies you don't shop for what you need only, you shop for what you want. So I came across a very, very interesting documentary done for the BBC where this topic is investigated. So where does this come from? How did we get to this place? And I found it very interesting, and I hope we can keep kind of in the background relinquishment and the practice as we look at this short parenthesis into this investigation on consumerism. So in the 1920s, there was a major shift in consumerism. Huge campaigns were out there to convince the public to shop not only for what you needed, but for what you wanted. From the practice, we know that we have endless desires. It's just one after the other. So when this is applied to shopping, we know how it can be an enormous shift in our way of consuming. So So there was one man in particular that made some very important and interesting changes. I don't know if you've heard about him. His name is Edward Bernays. And Edward Bernays did something different in that he adopted what was then a very new theory. The theory of Sigmund Freud that people are motivated by their unconscious desires. Now, what was interesting to a little detail is that Sigmund Freud happened to be Bernays' uncle. So he really took this theory, saw the possibilities for phenomenal changes in consumerism, and pushed it through. So this is the beginning of tremendous sophistication in how we work with our desires and acquiring. So back in the 1920s, so that you can just get an example of how Bernays was functioning. He was approached by the tobacco company and said, you know, we would really love to have the women consume cigarettes because, you know, the market is suffering. There was a big taboo about women smoking. So what did Bernays do? He again used psychology. He investigated through psychology what he could do, called a woman friend of him and asked her if she would participate in the New York City Easter parade, invite some friends, and in a very public way, light a cigarette and call it the Freedom Torches. Imagine that, the Freedom Torches. So to me, this really points to the beginning of letting go of ethics, of truth, in order to make more money. This is just a little detail. But if you're interested, I recommend you watch the documentary. But what was interesting to me was that at some point, there was an aha moment, and I thought, I get it. How is that we've gotten to where we are? And I won't go into details, but think of the larger political situation. The economic sector taking more and more and more and more and more power, dwarfing the political realm. So there is a little list in Buddhism that is not very well known that is called the Four Resolves, sometimes translated as the Four Foundations. And they are wisdom, truth, relinquishment, and peace. So how can we apply this little list to this reality that I have been talking about? We can take wisdom to establish the conditions to be able to perceive reality, to perceive our reality clearly. I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I have right now in this time an enormous desire to understand. How did we get to where we are? I want to understand. So can we invite wisdom to see if we can get some clarity? Once there is some clarity, we can get to the truth, the second resolve or foundation. And with the truth, it's as if we lift the curtain of ignorance and we can take a look of what is really happening. When we really get to truth, Then and only then we understand the value of relinquishment or renunciation. Then it's not such a bummer anymore. Ah, yeah, I understand that relinquishment has its value. Because relinquishment, really what it does is it offers us a larger, a bigger happiness. With relinquishment, you are giving a small happiness for a larger happiness. And when you are able to do that, you will get to peace, the fourth resolve. So wisdom, truth, relinquishment, and peace. So in the few minutes that we have left, a little bit about how can we train ourselves in letting go. And the Buddha, as it is usual in the Dharma, gives you very practical advice. You know, he says, realize that yes, it does give us a pleasure, a happiness, a momentary happiness when we get what we want. Right? We do kind of like, ooh, I got what I wanted. It's nice. So recognize that. That's not a problem. We start there where we are. But then he says, be aware that getting what you want is a lesser kind of a happiness. There are other kinds of happiness that are much more profound. And one of the happinesses that he's pointing at is the happiness of letting go. There is such a relief that is felt when you truly are able to let go of something that has had you kind of here by the neck. Another thing the Buddha points to is notice when you get the pleasure of getting what you wanted, how long does it last? And what happens once the pleasure is gone? Then another desire comes up. So there's something the Buddha points to that is interesting, that he says, notice also that the pleasure that we get from getting what we want is twofold. One is, okay, I got what I wanted, that's the obvious, and the second one is a lot more subtle, and that is the pleasure from the end of the uncomfortableness of wanting. Now, that might seem a little new for some. But notice that actually being in the wanting mode is uncomfortable. And so that disappears in the moment that we get what we want. The more we are familiarized with this dynamic of, oh, there is a relief when I let go, when I'm not wanting, the more I will be inspired to practice renunciation. And then lastly, you know, what do we do when we can't let go? When there's something that has us so much in grip that we just can't do anything about it. There again, the practice gives us such a kind response. There's nothing about, oh, you're a disaster, you know, shame on you. Nothing of that. But simply, we are asked, bring awareness to the fact that there is a desire and that you can't let go, and open up the awareness of how it feels. That's all. That's it. That's our practice. How does it feel to be hanging on to? The image that comes to my mind in this hanging on for dear life when really something has come to an end and we don't want to acknowledge, is hanging on to a rope for dear life and somebody's pulling it on the other end. And we get rope burn. It's painful. So those are my ideas for today for relinquishment and renunciation. So I hope that you see relinquishment from a different side of how it doesn't have to do with this extreme view of being an ascetic, and but it's something that we can live with on a daily basis, training ourselves the way we do at the gym with little things, giving up little things, and just feeling the well-being of being free, not being manipulated. Thank you.